Hi, this is Allison Sheridan of the NoSillaCast podcast, hosted at podfeet.com, a technology geek podcast with an ever so slight Macintosh bias. Today is Sunday, November 12th, 2006, and this is show number 69. Well, I had a nice little heart attack this week. In case you didn't notice, podfeet.com was down for like 2.5 days. The scariest part was not that my website was down, because VisiWeb takes my site down all the time. Happens, oh, I don't know, 4 or 5 times a year. But the really scary part was VisiWeb was down. I mean, gone. Just gone for days. It was really, really scary. At first, I tried to be calm, just going, you know, stuff happens, servers, networks, you know, that kind of thing. But then I started looking around in web hosting forums where people review different ISPs. And people were talking about the fact that VisiWeb had gone out of business. Can you imagine? I would have lost everything. I knew that I had a responsible company. I was paying them a fee for the service. It wasn't like it was some free thing, some fly-by-night group. So I knew they were running backups, so I never bothered to do my own. You can be sure I'm going to be doing weekly backups of my own from now on. I don't actually know how to recreate from the backups, but I do know how to make them, and I know some really smart people, and they'd help me figure it out. If they'd gone out of business, though, I think they would have taken my domain name with me. I'm not sure how this works, but I'm afraid they might have to give it to me for me to get it back. That wouldn't make sense, but still, it was so frustrating because I couldn't tell you where I went. I couldn't tell you why I was gone. Because everything about my podcast is related to this website that I'd created that they were hosting. I was just heartsick by the second day. My daughter said that I was acting like someone had died, and I guess in a way it felt like that. Not maybe like a close relative died, but maybe a beloved pet. Needless to say, I'm going to be moving to a new web host. I'm shopping for a new one this weekend. Research Department Niraj has two websites on VisiWeb too, so I'm in charge of supplying some viable options, and he's in charge of helping me figure out how to move. One thing I want to assure you right now is that if I ever disappear again for some reason, it's not that I just bailed and got tired of doing it. I guarantee you there would be warning, an announcement, something like that. I would just never walk away from you without closure of some sort. I'm just not that kind of person. I build really long relationships. Heck, I've got a friend I've been writing to since the 6th grade. We've never even seen each other since we were 11 years old. So, no worries for you, except know that if I'm not available, no, I'm going crazy trying to get back to you. There could be an interruption of service when we move from VisiWeb to the new host. I'm not sure how all that works, but I bet there's some period of time where there's a gap between the two, like during DNS propagation or something nerdy like that. But I will do everything I can to minimize it. All right, enough with the scary stuff. Let's get into the show. I have a great MagSafe connector story to tell you. You know how when you plug a laptop in to the power, invariably somebody comes running through the room and catches the power cord with their foot and yanks your laptop off the table and it goes crashing to the ground, forever ruining it? Well, maybe sometimes it's even you who knocks it off the table so you can't even yell at anybody. Well, Apple came up with an ingenious design called the MagSafe connector. Basically, the power cords on the MacBooks and MacBook Pros are held into the laptop with a magnet rather than a traditional pin connector. So, last week, I was over at my friend Melanie's house playing with photos on my laptop, and I was running low on juice. I told her, I'm going to do a very unsafe thing. I'm going to string my power cord across the doorway to an open outlet. But not to worry, because I had the genuine MagSafe connector. So we're playing along, I've forgotten all about it, and sure enough, here comes her Great Dane crashing through the doorway, knocks into the cable, pops it right up off, and the laptop doesn't even quiver. It was awesome. It was just such a great illustration of how it was supposed to work. But the story gets even better. She also has a dog that's a Labradoodle, which is a cross between a Labrador Retriever and a standard poodle. So she stands nearly as tall as the Great Dane. So anyway, the Dane had just crashed through and popped the connector off. So I picked up the connector end of the power cord, the part that goes to the MagSafe part, and I was holding onto it real tight, showing it to Melanie and rejoicing in how cool it was that it worked, when the Labradoodle comes flying through the door, crashes into the power cord, which I, of course, I'm holding tightly in my hand, so it rips the power block out of the outlet, yanking it out, bending both prongs like 70 degrees. Could not believe my luck. Oh well, couple pair of pliers deployed by two mechanically inclined women, and I was back in business. I'm telling you, that MagSafe connector is one of the coolest inventions Apple's ever come up with. I like Steve Jobs' line when he showed it at Macworld Expo. He said, "You're tired of breaking them, and we're tired of fixing them." Well, a few weeks back, listener Dean, a recent switcher, asked for a recommendation on recipe software. I had no idea this was such a hot topic. I explained to the audience at my house, two engineers, dinner is a highly repeatable situation. We have the exact same meal every Monday, the same one every Tuesday, on throughout the week. For decades. Hey, we're happy in our rut, but it looks like we scared some people. Let's hear listener Lynn's reaction to our repetitiveness and her suggestion for recipe software for the more adventurous Dean. Hi, Allison. I had to read this section to my engineer husband to be sure he appreciates the fact that he did not marry an engineer. Sorry, but your menu would bore me to tears. And I would never show up on Wednesdays. I hate broccoli, and I sympathize with your kids. By the way, Wednesday night is chicken, rice, and broccoli, one of my favorites. I certainly hope as they go out on their own, they are adventurous enough to try all the great food options the world has to offer. But on to the question. I started putting recipes on the computer years ago. In OS 9, I used an application called MasterCook Mac. It had a lot of nice features, like autofill on measurements and ingredients. But they had no OS 10 version and stopped supporting the Mac. Since I had hundreds of recipes in my computer cookbook, finding a replacement that could handle importing my existing cookbook was very important to me when I moved to OS 10. I used the old app under Classic for several months until I found the Recipe Manager at therecipemanager.com. They have Mac, OS 10, and Windows versions, and even support existing exporting shopping lists to an iPod, but I haven't tried that. It's only $39.95, and the incremental upgrades have been free or very reasonable. They also have friends and family packs available in 3 and 5 packs. You can enter your own recipes, import files from several other cookbook application formats, add photos, scale recipes, search recipes, create and save meals, calculate and store nutritional information. You can share recipes in the recipe book format or export them. It doesn't have quite as many printing style options as my old application, but I can export and dress things up if I want recipes for a printed book. Recently, I've been working on getting all my recipe cards and clippings entered into the program. It's so much easier to search on an ingredient or type of dish and pick from the list rather than hunt through a pile of paper. I have over 1,100 recipes entered so far and have some more to go. So that file is backed up in multiple locations. I like to try at least one new dish of some kind every week. My success rate is very high, and I don't think we have ever had to opt for takeout instead. Happy cooking, Lynn. Wow, a different recipe every week? That's just crazy talk. You guys are nuts. Well, unfortunately, I wasn't able to download the recipe manager because they don't have a trial version. But I think Lynn's review should stand above everything I would have said, since I don't actually cook beyond the cranberry chutney at Thanksgiving. Thanks for the review, Lynn. Well, as I mentioned last week, listener Ryan suggested both a freeware application called Measuring Cup, which I did review, but also a Mac-only shareware application called Connoisseur from the littleappfactory.com. It's $20, but they have a free trial. By the way, for those of you who are tired of recipe stories, I promise this is the last one. Anyway, during the download of the Connoisseur, it had a little survey that I filled out. They said, what would you like? You know, we wanted to hear a little bit about how you heard about it, rate the website, and add comments. And when it was done, they gave me a coupon for 15% off the purchase price just for responding to the survey. I know that's only $3, but I still thought that was kind of cool. I didn't know it before I did the survey, but now you do if you like it. When I launched Connoisseur, it asked permission to send my system information so they can more effectively support my configuration in the future. I thought that was polite, and they did say that no personal information like name, email, or IP address is collected. They have a Learn More button, so I pushed that, but it took me to a broken link on their website. The good news is that they had a little place where you could tell them that where their link was broken. I filled it all in, hit submit, and got a PHP error. How aggravating. Well, I'll probably write to them and tell them that's all broken. But they don't get my system information for being impolite about having broken links. On to the actual application. Connoisseur has a very nice-looking interface, and it comes pre-populated with 49 recipes, and I didn't even have to read the instructions to find these. The menu buttons across the top are easy to follow. New, delete, edit, and display recipe are the first four. The next button is really cool. It's called Cooking View. Now, this is interesting just from a technical standpoint. With a recipe selected, if you click on Cooking View, a warning comes up to tell you it's about to go into full screen mode. Then, just like slideshow mode in Apple's Mail, if you've ever seen that, the screen goes black and fills with a beautiful, clear, nicely colored recipe. You can advance through the recipe using the arrows if it's a long one. And I really wish I could figure out how to take a screen snapshot of it because it's really cool looking. But none of the 28 different ways we've reviewed of how to take snapshots would work when this was in this odd full screen mode. So if you don't mind having your laptop on the kitchen counter in danger of having food slopped all over it, this is a really cool feature. In Cooking View, you have the option for it to speak the recipe to you also, which sounds good, but the current voices in OS X aren't really good enough to make this useful. Maybe when Leopard comes out with the cool new voices, it'll be better, more useful. The next button says Add to Shopping List, and here's another cool feature, just like the one Lynn reviewed. It has the option to export the shopping list to your iPod. I can't believe you haven't tried that, Lynn. That sounds so cool. Just all high tech. You get to use your gadgets, use your new Mac. Okay, so you have to cook at the end. But anyway, I thought that was cool. It also has the option to export to either Handy Shopper or Splash Shopper. No idea what those two things are. I suppose I could have searched or maybe, I don't know, read the manual. But you guys can do that if you really care. The last button in the toolbar is called Share. And I think it's so if you have a recipe you really like, they'll add it to their online database of recipes. Isn't that a cool idea? Maybe Lynn could take advantage of that and share her wisdom with all of us. Let's dig into the sidebar and the other panes. The first thing in the sidebar is for your recipe catalog. The second is to view their online recipe catalog. Next are smart folders, which are really easy to create, and I can see how this would be a very useful functionality. At the bottom, there's a folder icon with a plus sign next to it. If you hover over it, it tells you that it's to create a new group. But it also tells you if you hold the Option key down, you can make a smart group. If you choose smart group, you're faced with a menu that allows you to create the conditions for it. This was so cool. First, there's a pull-down with name, cooking time, preparation time, source, and about 10 other criteria. And then, depending on what you pick, there's a pull-down for conditions that change, like... For example, I chose anything that I can cook in under 20 minutes, and it just populated it instantly. It was really cool. That's my kind of thing, less than 20 minutes. That's kind of my criteria. I checked each one of the recipes it came up with, and just like it said, there were 60-second chocolate mousse and 15-minute creamy fettuccine. I got to try both of those. As cool as many of the features are of Connoisseur, they fell back in my ranking when it came to entering information. Remember how in Yum and Measuring Cup, how easy it was to add multiple ingredients? In Connoisseur, you have to hold down Command-Shift-A to add an ingredient, and after a while, that actually stopped working. It got working again, but on the other programs, it was like just a tab or something like that, way easier to move around. When the Command-Shift-A stopped working, I found where it was in the menu, and it was grayed out for no apparent reason. I think I quit and went back in, and that fixed it. I did like how the units worked, though, a little better. Like typing in a C assumed I meant cups, which was not how Yum and Measuring Cup worked. And they seemed to find some other reason that C was for something else, and I thought that's a pretty obvious one for the measuring ingredients. Bottom line is a Connoisseur is the most feature-filled of the recipe applications I tested, and it has a beautiful interface as well. For $20, it's an excellent piece of shareware, but if you're on a tight budget, I still think Yum is outstanding. Okay, Dean, I hope this in-depth research has helped you choose the recipe software that will make your life easier. All right, for those of you who are bored to tears with the whole recipe genre, I apologize, but I have one more thing about it. It's not a full review, but I got this email from listener Phil. Good morning, Allison. I just listened to your show number 68 and thoroughly enjoyed it, as I do all of your shows. Boy, this Phil guy's a brilliant guy, don't you think? I listened to your discussion of recipe software with great interest, as I am a man who enjoys cooking, and I've been doing it for many years. I had the MasterCook recipe software on my G3 with tons of recipes, and it was wonderful. There is almost nothing it wouldn't do. I could add the ingredients list, including all of the nutritional values, which get summarized in each recipe. Thousands of recipes are available from many sources. Unfortunately, the software is no longer available for Macs, except for people lucky enough to run Windows XP. If you're interested in looking at another recipe program, you might like to check out this one, MasterCook Deluxe 9.0. Please keep the shows coming. All the best to you, Phil. The same application, both aggravated that they wouldn't be able to use it anymore because it was gone, but now Phil can learn from Lynn that he can use the recipe manager now to import his files from MasterCook. I think that's really cool. I love it when people end up helping each other when they didn't even realize that was going to happen. Good job, guys. Now you can get together. All right, we're done with cooking. Last week, I reviewed a freeware application called AppDelete from reggie.ashworth.googlepages.com/appdelete, which gives you an easy way to remove applications on the Mac since there's no add remove programs like there is on Windows. I wrote to Reggie and told him that I was reviewing his tool and teased him by telling him that he'll enjoy which application I would be deleting as a test. I like to tease him to get them to actually listen. As you remember, I deleted AppZapper, which is a shareware program that does the exact same thing as AppDelete. He wrote back with this. Hi, Allison. I tuned into your podcast and it was great. I'm really glad that AppDelete did the job for you and worked as advertised. And yes, I thought it was very funny about which app you chose to delete. Feel free to email me anytime if you have input at all concerning AppDelete. I listen and respond to all feedback, and all feedback will be considered when future versions of AppDelete are released. Thanks again. Great show. Sincerely, Reggie Ashworth. Man, I love Reggie's attitude. He really embodies the greatness of Macintosh freeware and shareware. Not only has he given us a great tool for our use for free, he's asking him to tell us what else we'd like to see. I wrote back to him and told him that since AppDelete did everything I wanted it to do, I couldn't think of a single request. But if you have any ideas about how it could be improved, I encourage you to contact Reggie. Years and years ago, my buddy Ron convinced me to go out and buy a webcam and play with him with the software See You, See Me, which was one of the very earliest video chat applications. It was started out of Cornell University, which explains why it starts with the letters CU. Get it? Double meaning? Very tricky. Well, I remember how we'd spend hours messing with frame rates and compression options, trying to get external and internal microphones to work, changing ports on our routers. God, it was so much fun. It was one of those things that was such a challenge to get working that when it finally did get it to go, we realized we actually had nothing to say to each other. The geek time spent was well invested, though, because we got a glimpse of what it was going to be like someday. I remember thinking we were looking into the future of what we were going to be able to do. The bandwidth wasn't really there yet, so the video was very choppy, and the compression algorithms weren't optimized, so the picture was just awful and really small. And the programming was immature, so the software changes were not repeatable. You'd try something one day, and then it wouldn't work the next day. We still found it fascinating to think about what we'd be able to do someday. That dream of the future came fully true for me this Halloween. My daughter Lindsay is away at college, and my buddy Ron bought her an EyeSight camera for her iBook as a graduation present. My husband just loves pumpkin carving and really enjoys dragging the kids into the kitchen with newspapers all over, making them stick their noses in the pumpkins just as the lid comes off. It's a real family ritual. I think he may be the only one who likes it this much, but we honor him with enjoying it too. We were kind of sad this year, though, when we realized it would be just our son with us and no Lindsay doing the carving. And then we got the great idea to see if we could do a video chat with iChat AV on our laptops. And that way she could participate. Well, Lindsay's always on chat, and she was looking for any excuse not to study. So she put on her EyeSight and we started a video chat. And we just set her on the table while we carved the pumpkins. The broadband access in our apartment is fantastic, so we had full motion video, full screen on our computer, and it was almost as good as having her there. She couldn't smell the pumpkins, but that was about the only thing missing. I put a photo of my son, wearing a crazy hat from his Halloween costume, with his arm around Lindsay inside the laptop screen. And it really shows you how real it was to have her there. Even better, I put up a video I took during the actual carving, and you can see how great the video motion was. One explanation I should give you is that right before I took this video, my husband had popped out one of the eye holes from his pumpkin to shooting it straight at Lindsay, which meant it went right onto my laptop keyboard. And I did not actually appreciate having pumpkin slime on my keyboard. And that kind of explains why I'm screaming as the video starts, because he's about to do it again. I hope you enjoy this and think about what you can do with your family and bringing them together now that video chat is a full reality. So you may not believe this, but I'm getting old fast. I know you think with my youthful appearance and my dulcet tones, it's hard to believe, but trust me, it's happening. One way I definitely notice is in my eyesight. My eye doctor says I'm really lucky because I'm just now starting to lose my reading vision, and I'm 48 years old. He says it normally starts around 40, so consider myself lucky. In any case, it's annoying as all get out. But this week, I found a cool tip that will really help me as I fall apart. On the Mac, they have built in the ability to zoom in on the screen on the fly. Simply hold down the control key and scroll up with your mouse. It's awesome. When you move your cursor around, it automatically pans with you so you can see wherever you're pointing. To zoom back out, just hold the control key down and scroll down, and it goes right back to normal. This could come in really handy if I'm making a video to explain something too. Sometimes I want to show the whole screen, but then the part I'm working on gets really teeny if it's like an online video. So if I could zoom in to show something and then zoom back out, it'd be much easier to see. In fact, while I was writing up these notes, I zoomed in until my text window filled the whole screen. My letters looked like they were about 18-point font, but it was so relaxing to not have to strain to see it. Who cares if I get old if I have my trusty Mac to come to my aid? On Windows, there's a couple of cool things. I'm pretty sure there's a way to do this zooming, but I couldn't find it, and I was too lazy to, like, I don't know, look it up. But I do know that on some of the, even the inexpensive scroll mice from Microsoft, they have a zoom button on them. So when you scroll, it zooms in, just like on the Mac. I've played around with that a bit, and it really works well. I also went into the accessibility control panel on XP and found a section on changes you can make to the display that are really fun. They've built in a bunch of what I would call themes for XP that give you higher contrast, makes the text huge, and makes it easier to see. I wasted a good 15 minutes playing around in there testing all the options. Lots of fun. I'm not actually really that depressed about getting old. In fact, I was excited to find out that I can join AARP in just 2 years. That's the American Association of Retired People. This is really cool because I think you get to eat cheaper and get coupons and stuff. Well, you got to eat dinner at like 4:30 in the afternoon, but still. So, I bet you think you're a big ol' smarty pants and think you can recognize the Google or Amazon logos a mile away, right? You see them all the time. You know exactly what they look like. Well, you need to go test your skills at guessthelogo.com. I got this tip from listener Neil, and it's amazing how much you don't remember about all the famous logos you thought you knew by heart. What this little site does is show you 6 versions of a logo, where they've changed the colors around or moved pieces of them, and you have to guess which one of the 6 is the right one. So for like Google, you know how each letter is a different color? Well, which letters are which color? Which one's green? Which one's yellow? Bet you don't remember. On Amazon, there's a little arrow, but is it under or over the letters? And which way does it go? On YouTube, one of the 2 words is inside a big red box. Is it you or is it tube? Anyway, while you're playing the game, you're being timed. And each time you click on the wrong logo, you get a big X on it and you lose seconds for all your incorrect answers. Once you pick the right one, it shows a green checkbox and lets you move on to the next test. It's really humbling to play and shows you how little we really pay attention. Thanks, Neil, for making me feel like an idiot. Well, I found a really cool cross-platform freeware application all by myself. No research assistance or anything like that, all by my lonesome. Let's start with a problem statement, as usual. You've got a big video, or maybe a bunch of high-quality photos you want to send to someone, but your email program and theirs won't accept an attachment that huge. You could use one of the web-based services where you upload the files to a location on the web one at a time, and then send links to your friend, and they go to the web and pull them back down one at a time. You could zip them up first into a single file, but that's extra work for you and for them when they have to unzip it on the other end. You also might feel a bit uncomfortable about putting your personal files up on a file server somewhere. Enter Pando from pando.com. Pando is a free personal peer-to-peer application that makes sending and receiving large files a breeze. Pando bypasses your email attachment limits with small .pando attachments, and instead of clogging your email inbox or your friends, it connects your computers directly. Well, I downloaded and installed Pando, which is a 3.6 megabyte download. Once installed, I opened the application and clicked the Send New button. This part is very much like if you were addressing an email. You type in their email address, or you can even send to their IM client, but they don't have to be online to receive the message. It's even integrated into the address book on OS X, and I'm betting if you use Outlook, it would know addresses in Windows too. Next, drag the file you want to send or a folder full of big files into the window, or you can browse to the files if you'd prefer. You can name the package if you want to, and you can even add a password to it so the person on the other end has to know the password to open it. Enter a subject and your message, and you're ready to go. I tested this first with my daughter, who was sitting next to me. She received an email that told her that she'd been sent something through Pando and to click here to download and install Pando. Once she'd installed, she was able to go back to the email and select the attachment, and it came down to her. What was really interesting was that it was not done sending from my end, and yet she was able to start receiving it on her end. At first, I was concerned about the speed, whether this was a good tool, because my upload wasn't anything to brag about, but then I saw the download at about 10 times the speed. That's when I realized, of course, that my upload and download speeds are different, just like everybody else. I did get 400 megabits per second upload, which is actually really good. You can even pause and resume your uploads, which is really nice. I invariably think of doing some really long operation right before I have to shut down and go somewhere or go to sleep or something. So being able to pause is a great feature. I went to their website and looked around to try to figure out how this thing works, and they have a section on the site called How It Works for Geeks. So of course I had to click on that. Part of the service is that they do put your files on a server. So I guess we didn't solve that problem. And I guess that means it's not exactly a peer-to-peer service, is it? There's some real benefits to that, though, and they do use encryption when they store your files. The cool thing about it is that they leave the file up on their server for 14 days, so that explains how they don't have to be online to receive it. Why you don't have to be online to receive. Wait, they don't have to be online to receive when you send it. Anyway, I discovered another benefit of having the files up there. I had sent the pumpkin carving video to my daughter, and then I tested Pando later with my buddy Ron, and I sent him the same file, and it didn't have to upload it the second time. It was already there. I thought that was pretty smart. One downside, but not something that really bothers me, is that since they have control over your files, if they're notified by a copyright holder that their files are being shared, they can disable access to those copyrighted materials. This means that they are in some way watching what you're uploading. Must just be by the file name, I would think. Not sure how else they'd be doing it. I say it doesn't bother me because I have no intention of stealing copyrighted materials. They do limit how much you can transfer to 1 gigabyte, but it appears that it's for each set of stuff you move. But then again, I didn't test it by sending four 251 megabyte files or anything like that. In any case, I think the ability to move a gigabyte is pretty generous, isn't it? They have a video on their website has the CEO talking and a bunch of other people, and in it they explain that they actually use BitTorrent technology, with the hard bits smoothed out. But I don't really get how it's BitTorrent. Because BitTorrent is a very efficient way of transferring files where a lot of people want the same file. But if only two people need a file, one person sending and one receiving, it's very, very inefficient way to do it. So I'm not quite sure how this works. I'd like to know a little more. Not geeky enough for me. This is a very sweet application, works flawlessly, provides a functionality that is very needed these days in the days of big video and photo files. I couldn't believe it was free. I kept thinking, what's the catch? Well, in the video, the CEO explains. He says they have three ways to make money. Number one, there is already a banner in the application so they can communicate with users and deliver service messages, but it can and will be used for sponsors. They have no plans to fill it with ads that scream at people, but they will make it available to companies like, say, a video company who wants you to see their wares. Like, let's say Mission Impossible 3 in HD is coming out and they want to send want a trailer. They could send that to your desktop quickly and efficiently using Pando. You could click on it and download it from there. The second way they plan on making money is through premium services. Right now, for free, you get 1 gigabyte of transfer, and it keeps the files up there for 14 days. They're thinking, what about if you could have 2 gigabytes and it was persistently available? Would you maybe pay extra for that for a premium service? Or maybe businesses will want to be able to use it, a premium version that's beyond the free version's capabilities. The third way is technology licensing. They expect that businesses will want to use their technology to develop their own products. They have some very serious investors to back that up, like Intel, for example. Did I remember to mention that Pando is cross-platform for both Windows and OS X? I'm telling you, these guys have done everything right. By the way, Pando's tagline is, "Thanks for sharing." Isn't that nice? Check it out at pando.com. Well, I have two cool iPod developments since we talked last. Cool, at least from my perspective. As you might remember, I trashed my iPod Nano a few months ago by sweating into the dock connector while I was wearing it jogging. I was using my beloved Lanyard headphones, but I guess I just worked out a little too hard that day. You know, I'm practically a triathlete. That's a joke, by the way. I run a 10-minute mile. Anyway, under normal circumstances, you'd think I'd look at this as an excuse to grab the newest Nano, wouldn't you? Well, one thing that was holding me back was that nitwit Steve Jobs had to move the dock connector and headphone jack 1 millimeter apart on the new Nano versus the old Nano, which, of course, renders all of the accessories that go into both jacks useless, including my beloved Lanyard headphones. I love these things, and they were $49, too. And even then, had I wanted to drop that $49 again, they didn't even have the Lanyard headphones for the newest Nano model. So the other problem was that I remembered that I also have a fully functioning Shuffle that does have a lanyard, so I can jog with it. I pretty much couldn't come up with an excuse to upgrade again. Well, then it happened. I went into the Apple Store, and they have come out with the Generation 2 Nano Lanyard headphones. And secondly, I happened to mention to the sales guy that my Nano had died, and the guy told me that if I brought it in, I could get 10% off a new iPod. That's great news for a lot of people out there who might have broken iPods. It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas. Well, on that happy note, I think it's time to sign off for the week. I really appreciate all the great feedback. Keep sending in the emails at allison@podfeed.com. And if you have the time and energy and inclination, make a voice recording and send it on over to nosillacast@gmail.com. And don't forget to hit the forums over at podfeed.com/forums. Thanks for listening and stay subscribed.